UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. How are you all doing? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Arizona is our destination tonight as we hear from Don about his UFO and paranormal encounters that he has experienced over the years. Don up next.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hello, Don, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you very much for having me on.
It's great to have you with us today, and you're calling from the state of Arizona.
Yes, I am.
Now, Don, you have some encounters to share. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, sir?
Yes, absolutely. First encounter that I had had was when I got a divorce, and I was living in Connecticut, and I moved out here with my son to the state of Arizona to live with my grandmother. Maybe I should give you some background on her. Like many months before I actually moved here, she kept on telling me that aliens walk amongst us, Don, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of, you know, to be honest with you, I thought it was kind of like the ramblings of an old lady. Like, yeah, come on, you know, there's aliens. That can't be true and everything. And she, you know, kept on insisting, no. There definitely is, and they walk amongst us here. I've seen them. I think I've actually met people who I believe are aliens. So with that, I said, well, you know, what really could I think of it? You know what I mean? I'm kind of taking my grandmother's word for it, because she was a very honest and forthright person. She was also very psychic. And, you know, I am myself, actually, you know, I have precognitive and a lot of strange things where I know things are going to happen before they actually do. You know, she's deceased, but to this day, I will still hear her voice sometimes. And, you know, it's almost sometimes if it's warning, like something bad is going to happen. And so it's kind of like a heads up from her, you know. A lot of this sort of thing runs family heritage. My mother, as well as, you know, very precognitive and, you know, she's very good at reading people. You would say, like, she meets someone and she kind of knows their life story without them even saying anything. Scares a lot of people, you know. So this encounter actually happened in the year 2000. I, like I said, I had just gotten divorced from my wife. moved out here to Arizona, and I started living with her in an apartment. And, you know, I'm restarting my life over. And I awoke, you know, out of the bed. My son was laying next to me because, you know, it was the first time I'm there and being in this apartment with him and with her. And all of a sudden, I had just felt like something was watching me. It just felt very strange. I felt off. And when I awoke, it was at 3 a.m. And for some strange reason, as soon as I woke, I looked at the window of the outside of the apartment complex, and it had shades, but you could see the lights behind it casting, you know, into the room. And there was a being, for lack of a better term, in the window. And its head was massive. It actually looked three times bigger than a human head. The being or the creature's shadow had an outline of wires coming from the left side of its head and had its right hand with four very massive elongated fingers, not five like a human being would. It was pressed to the glass. And it actually looked like it was starting to phase through the window, but not opening it, just, you know, passing through the window. I screamed, and the creature simply vanished, much like you would see in the movie Predator. That was the only thing I can ever liken it to, it disappeared exactly like the movie Predator, when you see the creature just simply just zip away. That was really quite intense and scary for me. And I did not sleep for about 2 days after that. The next morning when I woke up, I talked to my grandmother, and she smiled at me and sort of believed me and said, you know, I told you that aliens walk amongst us here in Arizona. Eventually, I would learn that the being was there for her and not me, at least not yet. That initial encounter in the year 2000 would bring back a memory of seeing a UFO over a deceased neighbor's home where I was living in New York City. This was in 1980, and I was 11. We had just moved into an apartment on the corner house. And it was a nice, you know, apartment and everything like that. Very, clean, neat neighborhood, everything. Back then, it was, you know, much different than it is now. The neighbor across the street had just died the previous night. And I woke to strobing light coming through my window. And at first, I thought it was the police or an ambulance. So I opened up the wooden shade a bit and saw a massive spinning top of multicolored lights above the old German's man's house who just had been deceased. And it was spinning in sort of a clock rotation. And it seemed to be rather big. And the best way in my young mind was that it actually looked like a spinning top with multicolored lights. This incident seemed to last about a minute. And, you know, in my young mind, I was in awe and shock just, you know, looking at it. My mouth, I'm sure, was agape. And then I heard a voice say, everything is okay. Go to sleep. And I did just that, never telling anyone of this experience until I confided in a very good friend at the time in about the year 2015. He said he believed me because he said, Don, do you remember when the alien Grays came and paid us a visit at my apartment? And I was kind of taken aback, and I said, well, what do you mean? And he said to me that he had a fascination with what you would call the alien Grays, although unbeknownst to him, it wasn't really a thing like it is now on History Channel with alien encounters and everything like this. It was very sort of behind the scenes, I guess you would say. And from this encounter, I remembered going to his house and we were playing board games. I believe we were playing Monopoly and then the Game of Life. And then, you know, all of a sudden, it seemed like the whole ceiling had faded away and given way, and you could actually see through it out into the open sky. And then I recall very little of that, what had actually happened. And many hours had passed, because when this had happened, it was still daylight. And then a few hours had passed. It must have been about 3 hours. And he told me it was time for me to go home now, and it was dark outside. Now, after that encounter in living in Phoenix, Arizona, we actually moved out here to Gilbert, Arizona, where my mother had a house being built, and we were all going to live with her. So after being there for about 6 months, my mother wasn't living there, and neither was my stepfather at the time. It was just me, myself, my grandmother, and my son. And I awoke one night after, I said, being there for about 6 months, to go to the bathroom. And I saw my grandmother at the bathroom window looking out into the backyard. And there was a very intense light. You can see flickering off her face coming from the backlight. And when she finally noticed me, she said, "Don, come look at this." And when I looked outside, there were various orbs of light. And some of them were red, some of them were green, some of them were very white, and they were bouncing and zipping across the backyard in all shapes and sizes, but mostly like balls of light. I said to her, "Oh my God, what is that? I can't believe it. What are we seeing?" Her response was, "I don't know, but I am going to bed." And I thought that was kind of a strange answer to give, because you're seeing this. So just being up on the second floor, I watched for several more minutes while these balls were doing their little dance and, you know, jig in the backyard and zipping and moving around. I was determined to get an answer and headed downstairs to go out back. I put my shoes on. I recall going to the back door and then nothing else after that. I woke up a few hours later. I was in my bed, and I do not recall how I got there. For it happened about midnight, all of this. And then it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, the next thing I knew. About a month after this incident came what I call the paralyzation incident. I was asleep one night and felt there were people entering my room. As hard as I tried, I could not open my eyes. I was scared to death and tried to get up. I could not move or speak, and I felt like I was being suffocated. I felt there were at least 3 or 4 people or beings in the room. I struggled, twisted, but was glued to the bed. In desperation, I said the Lord's Prayer over and over in my head. After what seemed like forever, I thrust upright from the bed. I immediately ran to my window and saw a fast-traveling light moving away from the house, speeding away. It got higher and higher until it hit what looked like to be a cluster of stars in the sky. But in actuality, it really was a cloaked ship from what it looked like to me. It looked like about a football field long. It then swirled and shot straight and left up into the sky. From there, of living in Gilbert, Arizona, we moved into an apartment. Me, my girlfriend at the time, who later on became my wife, and my son. And one night when we were living there, my son said to me, "Dad, please don't go. I have a very bad feeling that if you go tonight, something bad is going to happen." And I said, no, don't be ridiculous. We need the money. It's going to be okay." And he said, "No, Dad, please. I just have the worst feeling like something really bad is going to happen." And said, no, I'm going to go. So as I left, I remember him crying and having to put him into the bed with my girlfriend, who later on became my wife at the time. And as I drove that night and went to work, I got into a very bad car accident. I was hit head on by a drunk driver woman from a Circle K, which is a convenience store out here. She hit me head on, going about 45 miles an hour, and hit me so hard when the airbag went off, it seemed like time had stopped. That was the best way I can describe it. And I saw that there was this white flash that was above me. I actually saw the glass moving in slow motion, like as if actually time had stopped. And I still to this day am very perplexed by that. But as I did, something seemed to like shift and everything was a blank for a bit. And then I woke up from the initial crash, the airbag was deployed, and I started heading towards a brick wall. So I started pumping the brakes, but they didn't work. So I actually smacked into a brick wall. I had a subdural hematoma on the left side of my arm that was about the size of a football. And my left side of my chest got impacted from the steering wheel. After the initial deployment of the airbag, I took the steering wheel on the chest, and my chest swelled out to about 6-7 inches more than what it would be. I was very hard to breathe, and the front of the vehicle was on fire. I kicked the door open, came out, and I saw that the two women who were drunk were, you know, just sitting there, dazed, got rushed to a hospital. And that's when my son had told me, when you left, Dad, there were these massive orbs of white light that came in and out of the window. And he said, I felt like they were looking for you. And so I told them, go and see my father. Go help him. These orbs of light seem to be a very common thing that goes on with me. A lot of the times in my pictures, there will be white orbs of light, and there's absolutely no reason why there should be. And a very strange thing was, after this car accident, we had to get a lawyer involved. And when my girlfriend, who later on became my wife at the time, took these pictures, there were very strange black lights, almost like fibers, around my wound areas, with like circles of light in it. And it was extremely strange. And, you know, when she took these pictures, they had to be done, you know, professionally to see how bad the wounds were, you know, so on, so forth. And so again, there was no explanation why there was these lights again in the picture, but these were black lights this time. And to me, when I think upon it, it's almost as if that what I call the light beings were using their gifts to drain this damage out of my body. So after this, I married my wife and we became a couple, but I kept on always feeling that, you know, something was always watching over me. And sure enough, during all of this, I had, in the year 2007, an encounter with a young man at a security job that I worked. And this was shortly after the car accident. And this encounter totally changed my life. And to me, it was one of the strangest things that's probably ever happened in my life. And I have experienced many strange and paranormal things. One night while I was at work, I was feeling rather down and depressed. It was over a recent court battle with my mom. That turned very, very ugly. I wanted custody of him, you know, and just didn't work out that way. It turned more or less into a very bad situation, and I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, the neighborhood that I worked in was a very, very bad neighborhood full of drug addicts and homeless. It was truly bad. So while I was depressed, I started praying. At this time, I had become very religious. And a young man, shortly after my prayers, walked up on the streets, early 20s. He's wearing an army jacket, jeans, and on his left arm was a patch with a cross and the number 3 and 7. I thought that was odd, especially because those are very special numbers for me. It was part of game and very spiritual numbers, at least for me. They are and were and still are. He was actually quite handsome looking with wavy black hair and brown eyes. And for some reason, he reminded me of a Greek statue with his chiseled features. He asked me if the call center was hiring people. I told him probably, but he would have to wait until Monday, as this was a Saturday, and on top of that, sometime after midnight. He said thanks and asked if I believed in God. I said yes, and he became animated. He said to me he had just got out of the desert because he was in prison for 40 days and 40 nights. Well, I thought that was instantly strange because my mind instantly went to Jesus and the story of him being in prison for 40 days and 40 nights. As we talked, he said that while in prison, he would read the Bible to the prisoners, and some would be violent and crazy. Even though they were getting crazy, he would not stop reading, for he said to me, some of them were possessed by the spirit of wickedness. He looked hungry, and I offered him some food that I had for lunch. He ate very strangely, his fingers just taking little pinches and pieces. It was almost as if he didn't know how to actually eat correctly, which I found extremely strange. He stayed with me the entire night until morning. He then said, tell me about your mother and the tribulations you were going through with her. Kind of found that strange as well because I didn't mention anything like that to him. I told him how sad I was over the court case and spending lots of money on lawyers and how it was so unfair because it was not over child visits with a grandparent. It was really doing and saying things about me and my girlfriend that were just vile and evil. He then said to me very calmly, I will tell you a psalm in the Bible that you'll never forget until the day you die. He said, the wicked shall wither and rot like blades of grass in the summer sun. Later on, I found out that that was Psalm 37. Again, that number 3 and 7, which is always very profound in my life. He said, do you know what the psalm means? I said something to the effect of, you should not be evil and trying to be good to people. He said, no, and grabbed my hand and put it on the left side of my chest and said, no, your mother is wicked and she rots from the inside. Later on, I found out she had lost her left breast to cancer. That really shocked me when this gentleman had taken my hand and put it on the exact spot where he told my mother was wicked. He repeatedly told me he was an instrument of God. He told me personal things about myself he should not have known, especially knowing things about my mother. He seemed to know things about my girlfriend, too. I had no idea how he actually knew any of this. At one point during the night, said while I was sitting down, that he could kick me in my right knee and I cannot provide for my family. I thought that was really strange because that was the right knee that I had gotten into a bad motorcycle accident, and for a long time I walked with a limp. He had somewhat of a maniacal look on his face. I calmly said to him, no, you won't do that. And his demeanor changed, and he said, you are not like most men who would have attacked me by now. He said, that's good. You have a good heart. He kept asking me for cigarettes, and I told him, I don't smoke. And I thought, oddly enough, many employees would come out of this call center at night that I was security guard at. They would smoke, but not this night. Not one person came out in the entire 8 hours that I was there. And again, I thought that was extremely strange. But anyway, I reached into my wallet and gave him my last $5 to buy his cigarettes at the 7-Eleven across the street. The night started to wind down, and now he was very polite, nice, charming. At one point, while I was making my rounds and turned to look where he was, I turned around and I was completely startled and shocked. The young man who I now saw was a 7-foot-tall being bathed in white. They look like white robes. He had 3 fiery orbs for his face, and an actual halo is what I could see. He changed back instantly, and I rubbed my eyes, not really sure of what I saw. He responded rather gleefully but stern. He said, you saw my real face, and if you were to look on it for long, you would fall down and tremble at the Almighty God. Surprisingly, I never felt really scared of this man. During the entire time he spent with me, I was more shocked and really had a million questions in my head about who this person or thing was. As my night shift went on and it started to become morning, he parted ways with me. His last words to me were, remember, Don, you must wear the armor of God and you are a good man. Everything is going to be all right. Next day, I was doing my other job there, which was a day porter, cleaning all the garbage on the property, cleaning the windows, maintaining the entire property. I was thinking of him and how strange the whole encounter was, and how I was grateful to God that I actually met this man. And the very strange thing about that was, too, is he knew my name, but I never found out what his name was. Well, as I was cleaning up, the very first piece of trash I picked up was a McDonald bag with a $5 bill attached right next to it. The exact same $5, I think, that I gave that man. Also, what happened after this was we moved to Apache Junction. I quit that job and became a full-time garbage man. After about 3 months of living in Apache Junction, Arizona, I went outside with my dog Angel, a Labrador, to go throw the ball in the middle of the night. And there were neighbors that were not very close by, so it was actually a rather large, big backyard, and neighbors were far off in the distance, not close to each other. It was still a very rural part of Arizona, and still is to this day. And so when I went out, I saw this massive light just shine across the entire back and then shoot up into the sky. And I thought that was extremely strange. And my rational mind thought, well, that's a helicopter. That's got to be a helicopter. And any minute now, I'm going to see a helicopter come out. But there was no helicopter. And again, it was the orb of light, except this one was actually bigger than any other orb of light I have ever seen. Fast forward a few months after that, and I'm having a barbecue with my friend, and I'm telling him about the lights that randomly appear in the backyard. And he was like, yeah, I don't really believe you, Don. This doesn't really seem like that's the truth. And I said to him, no, I'm telling you the truth. So we went into the backyard and we started barbecuing, just sitting there barbecuing, drinking a beer. And as I'm telling him, no, there's very strange things that go on in this backyard. A ball of light about a softball size floated in between him and I. It circled both of our heads and then shot off into the sky. He was very scared and swore to me that I was doing something, that there must have been somebody planting a light and pushing it around, looking at us and everything. And I said, Sean, there is nobody around here. Nobody is doing any sort of lights and putting that on us. I'm telling you that there's strange things that go on here. And I do believe that this is alien in origin and nature. And he believed it after that because he had seen it and he had absolutely no explanation for it and never doubted me again. Also, it was very strange in that house because you always felt like you were watched. And sometimes there would be a knocking on the door at like 2 or 3 in the morning and you would go there and there would be nobody there. Now, what that was, I have no idea, but I assume that what I refer to, and I have always referred to these beings as the light beings, because that is what they have told me what they are. And strange enough to say, how I knew and eventually found out what they were was when I started to meditate and commune with them in my backyard while living out in Apache Junction, because the lights would appear and become more intense and move around. And I believe that these beings are made of light. Around this time, I believe it was 2014, I went to the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats. My wife and I had went to go see this movie. And through the entire movie, I kept on hearing the word Merkaba, which is M-E-R-K-A-B-A-H. And I'm saying, why am I hearing this word Merkaba? I don't know what that is, but it was playing throughout the whole movie. So I told my wife at the time, did you hear that? Were you listening to that when they kept on saying the word Merkaba the entire time throughout the movie? And she said, Don, I didn't hear that. I don't know what you're talking about. So I went home, looked up on the computer what the word Merkaba was, and it is what a human being can use to make what you would call a light body, when you can travel out to the cosmos. So now I felt that the light beings were conveying a message to me that they indeed wanted me to do this thing called the Merkaba. And it's a very old practice in Christianity. Again, I had no knowledge of this, but I believe it is something that they had implanted in my head and were telling me about. I went out into the backyard a few nights after this incident and communicated with them and told them and asked, if you want me to do this, what is the ultimate goal of this? And they told me it was to go out and travel amongst the cosmos. I felt when they told me this that they wanted me to go out there but never come back. And I said to them that I would not learn it because I could not leave my wife and my son. I really wanted to stay with them. The communication still endured, it still does to this day, but I don't know if they were happy or not with that. They never said one way or the other.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
After this time, one night when I was going outside to take out the garbage while we were living out in this Apache Junction house, I heard a voice, and it sort of sounded like a girl's electronic voice. It was very strange, and it was calling, "Daddy, Daddy," and this was from down in a abandoned lot that was actually about a half a mile away from where I had lived. Very desolate, big open lot, and I saw a strange orange light in there. I was so afraid, though, of hearing this girl's electronic voice mixed with electronic. It was so strange, but I knew it was like a little girl. So I became so afraid that I ran inside. I told my wife about it, and I said, I'm just definitely afraid right now, and I don't think I want to go down there. And she said, okay. Well, my daughter was born 4 years ago, and I believe that that was her voice that was calling out to me all those years ago. Very, very strange. Again, you know, more encounters with them, I believe, like the light beings is what I would call them. To this day, this is going back. This is from part of my journal. When I took my dog out for a walk last night, I was thinking about the light beings and how they watch over and protect me. As soon as I thought that and passed under a street light, the light turned like a strobe light and flickered crazy. I then felt like I was being watched and got severe chills. As soon as I got out from under the light and it stopped, I turned around the corner and there was a white cat looking at the both of us in there. Very, very strange. I have also survived MRSA and staph that I got when I was a garbage man, and this is when I met the woman Mary. I am also a diabetic on top of all of this, so I should preface by saying that I was very sick and staph that I got from being a garbage man. I had a massive node on my left ribs, cyst, and a fever 102 degrees. I went into urgent care, and my blood sugar was 400. I was so deadly sick that they told me to immediately go to the hospital. I did, and then they put me in a room, ran a bunch of tests, and said, well, now you have staph, so you have to be put off into a room, and we have to quarantine you away from other people. I did, and I got operated on and went through massive, massive problems with a giant wound back on the left side of my body and being very sick and very ill. And I thought I was going to die. I was in fever and very sick, very ill for like a full month in that hospital. And one night, while I was sick and laying in bed with a wound vac to my side and just sheer and utter pain, a knock came on the door. And my wife answered it. And she said, "Don, there's a woman named Mary here to see you." And I thought that was very strange because my grandmother's name was Mary. So I said, "Let her in." As soon as she entered the door, she gave off a glowing light everywhere. She was just radiant. She was an older lady with sandy blonde hair, and she just, you could see a light giving off of her. She exuded it everywhere on her body. I was very taken aback when she came in and started crying. And she immediately came to my side and said, "Don, why are you crying?" And I said, "Because I know you're here to heal me. And I know you're going to help me." This incident happened in 2013. And she said, "Yes, I'm going to help you." And she said some prayers over me and gave me the Eucharist. And when she did, I felt this instant burning sensation in my esophagus. And we talked a little while longer. And I said, "Well, Mary, could I ever see you again?" And she goes, no, not anytime soon. But one day you will." And I thought that was kind of strange that I would never see her again, you know, because she seemed like a genuinely nice lady. Maybe we could pray together or just talk. And, you know, and again, very nice lady, but I thought it was rather strange. So with that in mind, I said to my wife, Jennifer, and my son, Dakota, who was there, I said, "Listen, when you come up tomorrow, be sure to go down to the chapel and thank the Father for sending up Mary." And they said, "Okay." So they came up the next day and they said to me, "You know, the priest at the chapel looked really strange because we described Mary to him and we said what she looked like. And he went through all the denominations in his ledger and said there was nobody there who ever fit that description and who looked like her." So again, another strange person who came into my life and rescued me from what seemed like clutches of death and very sick. I've been a very blessed man my entire life and seen a lot of strange and paranormal things. Nick, I'll tell you the truth. You know, some of it is really very hard for people to swallow. You know what I mean? I could tell you other things. Right. My mother, when she gave birth to me, was also very strange. Like I said, you know, there are ones in my family where people are very psychic. And I do believe that my mother is unaware of her connection to what I refer to as the light beings. And, you know, it'll be really funny sometimes. I assume this is a part of it. I'll think about, you know, them and be like, "Oh, yeah, you know, it's the light beings." And all of a sudden on this other UFO group I belong to, Nancy Thames, "It's time for a disclosure." This woman says verbatim exactly pretty much what I'm saying, except they told her that they were called the light bodies. And I'm like, well, to me, they call the light beings, but that's pretty much the same thing. You know, my mother, she'll often have these strange red triangular marks on her hand. And when she comes close to me, you know, she says it burns. Like, and I'm like, "Well, what do you mean it burns?" She goes, "I just feel intense when I get close to you." And, you know, we've repaired our relationship where it was a very destructful, narcissistic personality towards one another. But I think now it's at a better stage and we can talk about things. And a lot of the things that she's told me that she has lived through as well, to me, always seems like it's been intervention. Now, whether this is, you know, you would say a religious aspect of this or a paranormal aspect, it runs within the same circle and it leads back to the same thing with these creatures or incidents. Oh, and by the way, the creature that and this is a feeling that I've gotten through meditation as well as just knowing that creature that I initially saw in the Phoenix, my apartment with my grandmother and my son, I believe that was some sort of an AI, that it actually wasn't like, it was sent by them. In other words, that it was some sort of a servant to, I don't know, watch. And that's why it had those wires sticking out of its ears or things like that. So that is the only conclusion that I can come to about that. Because, you know, after you sit here and you think about these things that happen to you, and you say, I don't think a lot of people go through this, or maybe they do, but they don't talk about it. You know, I should also say I have weird mutations in my blood. And how I actually found this out was 5 years ago, I had a stroke. I had a blood clot in my brain that was the size of a half dollar. And I probably shouldn't have lived. They told my wife that I probably had a 10% chance to live with the size of the massive clot that it was. And if I did live, that I was going to be a vegetable or a basket case, that I wouldn't be able to, you know, maybe tie my own shoes or anything like that. Well, it was very strange again, but when I had this stroke, I was not even aware, because the blood clot was so massive in my brain that I don't know a whole month of my life. And this was, again, 5 years ago. So when this happened, I kept on having a dream. And in this dream, there was a Chinese doctor talking to my wife and my mother. And he was saying, no, with these special herbs and roots and a diet, we are going to get him back to normal. He will be okay. You'll see. And then he would strap me to this table in a silver cocoon, a large silver cocoon with wires hanging off of it. And he would say, okay, every time I throw this switch, it is going to rewire the synapses in your brain. And I was like, okay. So when he would throw the switch and it would light up, his eyes would actually turn from a Chinese person's into a gray, an alien gray creature. This dream went on for about a week until finally I came out of a coma. And they were amazed that I actually came out. My kidneys were shutting down at this point too, because I was so deadly sick and just ravaged. My body was ravaged. And then I just started to make a full recovery. And they were amazed. The doctors were shocked. And I had to go to rehab for 1 week. And they said to me, they had never seen anyone recuperate so fast in all the years that they had been doing this at this rehabilitation center from a stroke. And it was even more amazing because of a large blood clot that I had in my brain. And then I said to myself again, I guess it's you guys watching out for me again, because I should be dead 10 times over with all the things I've lived through in my life. And again, I was just amazed that I lived through. I actually, to tell you the truth, I thought I was dead and living a dream for about the first few months after I woke up out of the coma. I said, this can't be real, because, you know, you're telling me everything I lived through here. Matter of fact, there was one woman who was a surgeon who was retiring because they weren't sure if they were going to have to go operate on me and wanted to look around in my head again. And this was supposedly the top surgeon who was retiring, and she wanted to meet me. So I said, okay, sure. I go in there and I'm sitting on top of the table. And as soon as she comes in, this little old meek lady, she said to me, are you okay? And I said, yeah. And she said, I am just amazed, because I was just in the other room reading all your files. And by every instance, I would think that she would be in a wheelchair, curled up in a ball, in the corner of the room. And she said, here you are talking to me. Everything is fine. She goes, it's truly amazing. She goes, I've never seen anything like this. And when you hear things like this, you know, it sort of makes you say to yourself, am I something different than a human? You know, I kind of think I am, because I had this weird JAK2 mutation, which made my platelets constantly go. So while the platelets are the thing that makes your blood stick and go together, it heals you and it heals your body. And so even though I was a diabetic, my body would heal very fast, which they couldn't understand. So this was a mutation in my blood. And just about 3 months ago, I had to do a colon test and it came back abnormal. They thought, oh, well, you've got cancer. You have abnormal DNA inside of your colon. So now we have to do a colonoscopy. So they do a colonoscopy, find absolutely nothing wrong. But then they tell me inside of your stomach and colon tract, you have abnormal DNA, which we have no clue why. So I have an abnormal blood disease, an abnormal blood, abnormal DNA inside my colon and intestines, which they don't understand. They have no explanation for it. Again, very strange and very, very surreal sometimes that these encounters take place and everything like that. Again, I have a lot of pictures as well, Nick, of, you know, these strange orbs of light and everything like that. So maybe I'll share them sometime.
Yeah, feel free. People can listen and then okay. They can go and check it out.
I will. I'll show you the picture as well of the shadow woman on the original London Bridge out here, the one that's in Lake Havasu, Arizona. You know, I will show you that as well. Yeah, it's a picture of a shadow woman. Very strange, too, as well. This was after I got out of the hospital and I had the MRSA and staff, and my wife was like, well, listen, let's go to the original London Bridge out here in Lake Havasu and we'll go take pictures and everything. And I said, sure. And when they took a picture of me, and, you know, I felt like it was just so cold, although it was not, because it was in the middle of summer. I believe it was August, and it was just so hot. And you see a woman in a Victorian dress, and she's actually right there in the picture, like in the fog. It's crazy.
That's right. The bridge that's in London today is not the original. For those who didn't realize that,
right?
It's in Arizona, the original one.
Yep. They moved it in the 70s, brick by brick, which I thought was very strange, but very cool.
Yeah, very strange and unusual location to send it to.
Yes. I do believe that they, in the 70s, because the government of London was like, listen, we're just going to dismantle it and throw it away. So I forgot who was the governor at the time. And he went over there and had all the bricks numbered piece by piece. And it was put all together exactly the way it was. You can actually see, like, I believe that part of the story was that they dismantled some of the metal lampposts on the bridge that were used in Napoleon's cannons. I believe that's part of the story.
Yeah, London would, especially after World War II, they would use things that were left over from the war. There's parts of London which has railings. They were used as like stretchers and stuff. And then there's some bollards around the city that were, yeah, originally cannons from past times. I know the bridge was built 1820s maybe. So it's interesting how they were just going to dismantle it and throw it away, as you do with bridges. Interesting, that one. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the spirit went with it, traveled all that way.
Yeah, apparently. And it was creepy because, again, I have seen spirits in my life and everything like that, you know. But the odd thing is I more or less can capture them on film. Why? I don't know. You know, I've never quite figured that out. But, you know, it just happens. We go to Tombstone. And we've captured EVPs and things like that. But also, too, you know, you see the ghosts. Things like that, so on and so forth. My mother and my grandmother were far more able to see them and interact with them than I'm able to.
But this is something which seems to have gone through your, you know, your whole family, with your grandmother, your mother, yourself. What about your son?
He, I believe, is personally a little bit afraid of it. He's a little bit frightened of it. See, he's 26 years old. He will be 27. And he has seen things. He's seen the UFOs. One incident I did not tell you about, and this happened to be when we lived in Apache Junction, first go around out there, was that he said he woke up one night and he saw sparks coming off. And there was a power station that had just been down the block. It was extremely close. And he said he saw a ship, and it was a disc shape, you know, ship. And he said he can see beings in the window ports. And he looked at them, he waved at them, and then all of a sudden the ship shot off. He said it looked to him like they were siphoning off of the power grid there. That's what he shared with me. He was the one who also saw the orbs that night I got in the car accident, that he said they were coming in and out of the window looking for me. I don't know what those orbs are. I believe that they are, you know, UFOs or some sort of entity that watches over and protects me, because I've seen them. And it's just very surreal, very strange. And I've actually captured them on film as well. So, you know, they happen to be just balls of white light.
And that was the night that, you know, when they came in your son's window, and then he sent, looking for you. And
yes.
Then he sent him your way.
Correct. And the car accident, that's when it happened. That's when it was, when the time had stopped and everything like that. It was very, you know, that car accident itself was, I should have been demolished and destroyed. And another thing I didn't say was the hospital sent me home with no blood thinners and everything like that. Well, I had a subdural hematoma on my left side of my arm the size of a football, and my chest was swelled out. You know, I could have had a blood clot and died then.
And do you think these beings have certainly had a hand, obviously, throughout your life, especially when it comes to health and recovery?
Yes, most definitely. Yes. Many things that I shouldn't have lived through, I did.
You took a religious route. Do you think they're one and the same?
Yes, I do. I think a lot of these encounters that they talk about in the Bible, especially Ezekiel and the wheel, that those were actually UFO encounters. I believe that he was describing starports. I don't know which section of the Bible. I'll be honest with you, I've read the Bible, but I'm not really, like, you know, gung-ho into reading the entire thing, you know, and doing that way. I do believe there's something, but I'm not exactly sure 100% what, you know, still at this stage in the game. I know there's something. I've seen it with my own eyes and everything like that, and experienced things like this, you know, angel boy and the Lady Mary, you know. But again, that young man who came to visit me when I was going through those hardships with my mother in the court and all this, he seemed, I don't know, I knew things about me. He could have been a hybrid for all I know. Very strange things go on out here in Arizona, Nick, though. Always have. You'll see a lot of instances of UFO activity out here.
Yeah, you got that right. I have a lot of guests which come from Arizona.
Yep. Very strange. Very strange. You know, I met a lot of really cool people here too that I never would have and everything like that. You know, when a matter of fact, you know, like I said, the precognitive thing, I happen to be better at it than my mother or my grandmother was. A very strange incident was my grandmother telling me when I was in, I think it was fifth grade. So this would have had to have been, what, when you're like 10, so 1979. And she would tell me, Don, she told me one night, Don, do you want to see the future? And I said, yeah, sure, of course. Who doesn't want to see the future? And she said, okay, so tonight when you go to bed, what I want you to do is dream of a spiral. And I said, okay, I'll dream of a spiral. And she said, and when you do, she said, keep on absorbing it and looking into it, and you'll dream about what happens tomorrow. And I said, okay. So I went to bed, and I had this dream the entire night of what was going to happen the next day in school. And so woke up, and I'm all excited, you know, in my young mind. And I'm like, wow, I can't wait to go to school because I know exactly what's going to happen. And this guy who I was friends with, Joey Robinson, he was like, hey, Don, how you doing? I'm like, good, good, Joey. You know, hey, listen, you know what's going to happen today? The principal is going to call a special auditorium because we're all going to be called down for, I think we were selling stuff through this magazine, and it was, you know, schlocky little things and everything like that for the school. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, and they're going to show in the auditorium these cartoons and in this order. And so all of a sudden, as I say this, about 10, 15 minutes later, the principal comes on and says, going to have a special auditorium for all the stuff the school has been selling, and we're going to come down. And then when I, you know, told him what the movies were, the cartoons that we were going to see, Tom and Jerry, Popeye, and whatever else it was, he was kind of like shaken back. And then I said to him, as we got back to the class, okay, now the teacher is going to call a special pop quiz. But don't worry, because you're going to get this score, and I'm going to get this, and we're going to pass. Well, teacher calls a pop quiz. And sure enough, that's what happened. So I started looking at Joey's face, and he was looking a little queasy at this point. And I think, you know, saying to himself, why is this guy able to do this? Why is my friend saying this and able to see this? And then I kind of heard this voice. I've heard this voice before. I guess it's my higher self, you would call it. And it said, Don, don't share any more with him. He's scared. So I didn't. And for a long time after that, I wouldn't do the spiral trick, as my grandmother showed me, because I didn't want my classmates to be afraid.
That certainly is interesting, Don. I'm also interested to know if that is a technique that people can use. Is this something you've tried again?
To tell you the truth, I never really had to, because they would just come to me in dreams. Like an example was, again, the Apache Junction when we were living out there. Now we live in Gilbert, Arizona. But when we were living in Apache Junction, I had this dream. We had this dog Angel, you know, and she was a great watchdog and everything. So I said to my wife one morning, listen, Jen, you have to go out and you got to get more dog food and kibble because we're going to have another dog. And she goes, you're crazy. She goes, what do you mean we're going to have another dog? And I said, I'm telling you, it's going to be a little white dog. It's going to be attached to our son. I said, I had a dream that I was in the car with you. I said, but I really don't think I was with you. I think I was just watching over you and able to see this. And you picked up this little dog on the side of the road, and it came live with us, and it loved us and was attached to our son. About 5 months after that, another dog, little white dog, she picked up on the side of the road while she was driving my son to school because I had told her to get the dog food, which she didn't. She didn't listen to me.
It's a very thin veil, Don.
Yes, yes, I agree.
Telepath is a weekly digital newsletter filled with the latest paranormal news, trending topics, and fresh articles from some of the most popular critical thinkers in the community today. Stay informed on your favorite paranormal podcasts and live streaming talk shows. Interact with the Telepath and upload your paranormal story or pics. It could be featured in an upcoming edition. Sign up right now for the free Telepath newsletter at paranormal.radio. That's paranormal.radio.
My daughter now, on the other hand, she's a miracle child. My wife is younger than I am by like 11 years. So I am 54 now, but I became a father again at the age of 50 to little girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, looks just like me. And this one knows things. And again, I believe it's because I've also taught her, though. I will take things in my hand and say like an M&M. You know, in two hands, and I say, okay, what color is this one and what color is this? And 80% of the time, she will get it correct. because I believe I'm training her mind to think outside of the box. I guess you would say, much like in that movie, the men who stare at goats while they were, you know, training them to remote view and use their mind and everything like that. I do believe that these things are quite possible, and they are all within the realm of possibility. But not only do you have to want to do it, you should do it and try it, because it actually brings you to a higher state of consciousness. She is very gifted, my daughter. She knows things. She knows that. And as I've trained her, like I said, to think outside of the box, while we're walking our dog the other night, the new dog, Lily, I'm thinking of this ministry song in my head. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she goes, "Dad, ministry." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she goes, "That's what you're thinking in your head." And lo and behold, I was. So she seems like another one.
Well, I mean, she, you know, number one, she's your daughter. She has your DNA. When you were a kid, you know, you got some ideas and stuff from your grandmother. But whereas with your daughter, you know, you're teaching her things. So maybe she can be more acceptable, more connected.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah, of course, the Men Who Stare at Goats is an amazing book, and then later became a film. And yeah, it's technique. I think these techniques can be taught. Yeah. You know, whether you think you have abilities, psychic abilities or not, these, you know, there's things there which can be taught.
Yes, most definitely.
Just people have to get more connected. And, you know, we have a lot of listeners out there which are connected, and they try these techniques and they learn from them.
Yes, you get connected to the source. And everything. I've also seen things that were, you know, quite scary at sometimes too, you know. So premonitions of 9/11, that was really scary when I lived in New York City, because, you know, that's where I initially came from. And this happened to be about, I want to say, 1991. I was going on a train ride into Manhattan. We had worked there, you know. I had lived in Woodhaven, Queens, New York with my friend Nick. And I said to him, you know, as we were traveling along and we saw the Twin Towers, I said, you know, one day that's not going to be there. And he was like, "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" And I was like, "No, it's going to be demolished, man. Some terrorists are going to attack that and it's just going to be destroyed." And he was like, "Oh, come on." And then years later, sure enough, it happened, unfortunately, you know, and changed our world. And then I have this weird, I guess you'd say, gift. I actually found out a few years ago what it was called. It was called clairaudience, where I smell if someone is going to die. It smells like extinguished candles. And I smelled that when my son with my ex-wife passed away. He unfortunately wasn't born, but the night before it happened, there was a smell of extinguished candles all around her body. And she just reeked of it. It smelled like someone had just snuffed out candles all over her body. And it was, again, when my grandmother had passed away. Before we actually knew that she had cancer, she came walking into the room one time. And I said to her, "I smell candles all over your body." And she said, no, can't be. And then she was getting really nervous. And I said to her, "No, I definitely smell it. It's all over you." And sure enough, she did. She had the cancer and then she died.
Yeah, it makes you wonder when pets, you know, stay by their owner's side, you know, before their passing. That same with animals. They know when someone's sick. They know when someone's passing.
Yes, I believe so. My dog Angel, though, she was very different, though. The dog Lily I have now, she's a good Labrador. You know, she's okay and everything like that. But this dog Angel was almost as if she could read your mind and think what you were doing. I could walk her without a leash. She knew when my blood sugar would go low. We trained her to do that, again, because I'm a diabetic. So, and we trained her. She learned how to do that. I would throw a piece of food on the floor and say, "No, don't eat that. Until I come back." I would leave. It would be there till I came back. Yeah, she was not only loyal, smart, very good. Very good dog. Yes. Animals are very perceptive. And I believe tap into a primal sense that in some ways we don't have anymore, you know, due to like the technology that sort of makes us, I don't know if you would say lazy or complacent, but a different way of thinking.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. It's like we're wired in now, as opposed. I think we are losing so much. We are gaining, of course, but I think we're losing a little bit, a part of ourselves, maybe becoming less human somewhat.
Absolutely. Right. There's a lot of really scary times coming down the pike, which I don't think a lot of people are prepared for. It's just, I've always believed, I guess, ever since I was young, eventually there has to be a reset, because we reached this plateau of becoming too much of the ego in ourselves. And we say, oh, no, we can do that and we can do this. Well, because, you know, we're human and we absolutely can just, you know, make this and do that. And sure, that's all great and good and everything like that. But it's when you reach out and you really try and help people and do things for a more peaceful solution instead of the will-based ego, that I believe that it's better.
I think if everyone did that, you know, everyone, then the world would be a very different place and not the, you know, the place it is at the minute.
Right. I agree. But it is what it is.
It is what it is, but the world has become very strange in the last 20 years, you know, as soon as we hit the millennium.
Yeah, well, especially with AI now too and everything like that, you know, like just for example, right, in the Stanley Kubrick 2001 A Space Odyssey, which that man knew things. He had to be a visionary and probably somewhat psychic, clairvoyant, that you see the astronauts and they're all looking at tablets on the table. And this is way before there were ever tablets for, you know, children and Kindles and everything like that. And it's all good and everything like that. You know, you see them actually watching these things on a Kindle, essentially, or, you know, a little flat screen TV. And but the very next scene was the AI takes over and destroys everybody. So,
well, it was written by R.C. Clarke, and he was a visionary.
Yes.
And a lot of things, yep, that he's written in his books over the years, because it was a Space Odyssey. There was others, you know, he wrote other books around that as well. And there are many things which he, you know, he predicted. But he actually used to present a TV show. And he'd written books about the paranormal and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was on a TV show called Arthur C. Clarke's Strange and World Powers. And this is 1983, I think it was, when he used to do that. So
right.
He did write about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which now have actually come to pass.
Yeah, a lot of those writers were visionaries. You know, Philip K. Dick, so on and so forth. A lot of paranormal experiences in that field and everything like that. Very strange. If you've ever read the exegesis of Philip K. Dick, that's a mind opener for sure.
I've never read that one. No, I read
Do Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep?
Yes, yeah, which actually became Blade Runner.
Yes, yeah.
And Minority Report, which was all about pre-crime, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But no, what was the one you said?
Oh, the exegesis of Philip K. Dick.
Okay, I'll write that down now so I can get hold of that one.
Yeah, that's a mind blower, where he talks about being visited by a pink light that revealed to him his past life and everything like that. Yeah, I was shown my past life. That was pretty wild. And oddly enough, it was with a woman who I was dating out here. And I had been with her through quite a few lifetimes. It was very bizarre. I had met this woman. Well, this was after I got a divorce. And you know, I sort of liked her, this girl, Amy, but at the same time, and I had just gotten a divorce and I wasn't really sure I wanted to be involved with anybody at all. And we fell, I wouldn't say in love, because, you know, love after a divorce is really, but we became very close, you know, intimate, everything like that. And the very first night we went out, I met this friend of hers called Brianne. And we were having a few drinks, you know, and Amy says to me, Don, give her anything from you and she's able to hold it and tell you where it came from. So a few days previous to this, I had gone into the garage to go get a nail to hang up a picture on the wall. And there was a medallion of St. Jude in the box. And I said, that's pretty damn strange that there's a medallion of St. Jude in there. So I show my grandmother at the time. I said, Gram, what is this? And she goes, oh my God, you know what that is? She goes, that's a medallion that your grandfather gave to you when you were little and first born. I said, really? I said, huh, what would it be doing in a box of nails? She goes, I don't know. So I hand this woman, Amy's friend, Brianne, this medallion. She holds it for a few minutes. She opens her eyes and she goes, Don, there's a man standing next to you in a brown suit with gray hair, horn-rimmed glasses. He's smoking a cigar. He wants you to know that he is the one that gave this to you, and he's your grandfather, and he always watches over you. I dropped that beer neck out of my hand and was like, how could this girl know that? You know? Yeah. And it was crazy. So as we were going home, this girl, Amy, got sick. She drank a little bit too much and was sort of not feeling well. And she was like, well, Don, stay with me and everything. And I was like, okay, but, you know, I want you to go home. I want you to sleep it off and everything like that. So this girl, Brianne, is saying to me as we drop Amy off and we walk into the door and put her in a room and everything like that, she said, Don, you know, you've been with this woman, Amy, before. And I said, yeah, right. Come on, sure. She goes, no, you've been with her a few lifetimes before. Said, yeah, sure. She goes, no, listen, when you go home tonight, you're going to dream about it. And I said, listen, I'm not going to fall for that. You know, I said, my mind's a lot stronger than that. And she goes, no, you'll see. So sure enough, when I went home, I must have been with her about 3 or 4 different lifetimes. And I saw them all. It was in Roman times in one. Another one was where I was this painter in France and painting her. And another one was the Wild West of all things, where she had like a bonnet hat and everything. And I had seen them all. Like, they all played out in my head and everything like that. And I just woke up and said, what the hell was that all about? You know? So I called her up, you know, it must have been about 2 in the morning. And I said to her, hey, you know, I just had the strangest dream about you and everything. She goes, yeah, I just had the strangest dream about you too. And she recanted the same exact dream that I had.
That's interesting. You know, they do say, you know, the people around you, you know, we move from lifetime to lifetime, and we're always in roughly the same kind of group. You know, we're talking about AI and getting connected and, you know, locked into this. And I think human beings are already connected. You know, we are already on this big hyperlink. You know, we're all connected. We're all in a big web of consciousness all over the world.
Yes, I agree completely, Nick, with you on that. Most people don't know it, though. Yes.
No, I don't think they do, no. But we are. Well, keep us updated, you know, if anything else, you know, does happen.
Sure. Absolutely. And that was important for me to tell that and sort of, you know, get it off my chest and speak my piece. I was a little nervous at first, but then I said, no. And, you know, my wife insisted. She's like, you need to tell your story, Don, because, you know, there's a lot of strange things that go on, you know, within the family and with you. And I think they need to be told, because she says, I do believe that other people experience these things. And I said, yes, I agree. And so that is essentially why I agreed to come on. And, you know, honestly, that is why it is very important to talk to people. And I've always felt and looked for, I guess you would call, signs to do this. And they've all been pointing to that this is the time now and everything to do this. And, you know, speak. And I was very happy to speak with you, and it was very nice. I enjoyed it.
We enjoyed listening, Don. I say, you know, if something strange and very, very bizarre and doesn't make sense, and it isn't like something mainstream, share it, you know, because I guarantee there are other people out there, you know, which have these very, very strange accounts.
Yes. Yes, I agree. In Connecticut, where I came from, after I lived in New York, I'd lived in Connecticut for many years after that. That is a hotbed of paranormal activity, really, really, really very scary and old, you know, that old New England town and everything like that, the old New England feel, which is very, I had actually, my very first apartment, I had come to find out it was an insane asylum in a funeral parlor.
That's a good mix.
Yeah, real good mix, Nick, for seeing apparitions. You know, oh, it was horrifying. It was really horrifying.
To our listeners, anyone thinking of moving to Connecticut, it's a beautiful place. But anyone living in Connecticut, if you've had any strange experiences, feel free to share them. We have had a few guests from Connecticut, but I believe we could certainly get more.
Yeah, there's interesting times. I have I guess you'd say a family member, really. Odd enough, it's my ex-wife's family. They still talk to me more than they do to her. So I don't know. But he is like her nephew. And he still talks to me this day, and he experienced a lot of this with me. He was there while these things happened. Like, I'll give you one example before we go. And it was my son had passed away. I told you about that, smelling the candles on the ex-wife. So my other son was born, and he was just about turned a year old. We were downstairs playing pool. We had a pool table in this condo in the basement. And so I had the baby monitor on. And at this point, my son Dakota, and all of a sudden one night the baby monitor flared up and it said "Daddy," and it sounded like it was coming from a tunnel. You know, was that voice saying "Daddy, Daddy"? And then I said to myself, "Well, what is that? That's not Dakota." I run upstairs. I'm looking around, you know, seeing him, and I'm saying to myself, "That's clearly not him. He's not even talking." So my ex-wife was working at night, and when she comes home, I say to her, you know, it was the strangest thing. I tell her about the incident with the baby monitor and everything like that. And she says to me, "Don, do you realize that was the day that our son passed away?"
That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say. Like I said, Nick, I've experienced a lot of paranormal, scary things like that, but I was never really frightened of those things, I guess, because I grew up with it, you know. So I do believe also too that these ghosts and alien encounters somehow travel within the circle of one another. They're interconnected. I get this impression that they are.
Yeah, no, they are. A lot of people which have these, you know, these encounters, these alien encounters, they've usually been surrounded by paranormal activity their whole life, you know, and several other things which are strange. To have multiple things happen is not uncommon, and it's not uncommon for me to hear at all. You know, I hear it very, very often. Some people are very skeptical when they say, oh, you know, you can't see a UFO and see a ghost and see a Bigfoot and stuff, you know, but, you know, these things are interconnected somehow.
They are. In that circle or sphere, I agree with you. They're all interconnected.
I mean, it's the million-dollar question.
Yes.
Wonderful. Don, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that all for our listeners.
Okay, thank you, Nick.
Definitely keeps updated.
I will, Nick. You have a good night.
Yeah, it's been great speaking to you, and you enjoy the rest of your night.
You as well. Take care, Nick.
Thank you, Don.
That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Don for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.